is a fireside chat live at PitchCon. PitcherList.com/PitchCon. By the time you listen to this, it might be over, but go watch the videos on YouTube. They're going to be on the PitcherList YouTube pretty soon. I am joined, as always, by the fire, by Nick Pollock. Nick, good morning, sir.
What is happening? It has been too long since we've been on a proper fireside chat, and I wasn't going to allow this to get bumped from PitchCon. Not allowed. That.
We had to work some things, but hey, we got it done. And you know, again, by the time a lot of people listen to this, if they're listening to it on the Sleeper and the Bust feed, the special guest will have already happened. But we had to move this because a big event is happening on Saturday, January 27th. Obviously, you're not going to spoil it, but I believe you have a big chat, maybe another fireside chat with a particular pitcher. How excited are you by that?
I am very excited. I think the chat will be very excited as well. I mean, this is a pitcher that I've said that it is a mystery pitcher. I think it's going to be really interesting to see kind of what their mind is going through on the hill and just really the developments that they've had. And it's just a really fun time to be able to sit down with a player and really get all their insights. So I am very stoked for that. But I'm also really stoked for this podcast because we haven't really talked much about our stances yet.
That's
true. We've certainly done it a ton separately. But I don't really even know where we are differing on certain players right now.
I have not dove into it either just yet. You know, I put my pitcher ranks out a couple weeks ago. I know you had a big one early right after the offseason. When is your next big update? Shortly after the Super Bowl.
It is so wrong now. It's so funny. It is actually the week before the Super Bowl. So when PLX comes out, the update. Yes, PL10, we skip 9 because that's what all the cool tech companies do. There's no iPhone 9. There's no Windows.
Are you serious? I didn't know that. That's cool.
So pitcher list is technically, this is our 10th season of pitcher list, 11th in total. And PLX. Yeah, right. Exactly. 2014. So a PLX is what we're calling it. And yeah, I'll have my full top 300 out then, which is, I think, the longest article technically I've ever written. I think it's something like 100,000 words or something.
That's stupid. Incredible. Used to do that with the SP guide. And I don't know who that person was who used to write 100,000+ words in off season. But
Saul Porer.
That's Saul Porer's problem, dude. That guy, that guy's crazy. But, you know, the guy that you are going to talk to later today might be a part of this type of conversation next year because we're talking rising interesting pitchers. And yes. It's actually a little bit of a mixed bag. I almost said rising young pitchers, but one of them actually isn't young. And that's kind of another just quirk because I think he's seen as a bit young because of his lack of volume. We are talking about Tyler Glasnow, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and Tarik Skubal. Yeah. These three pitchers are going 11, 12, and 13 in that order. Glasnow, Yamamoto, Skubal in drafts this offseason.
Wow.
Among starters. And they're all top 50 picks. And one of the things, it's intense. One of the things I wrote, you know, when I was doing the write-ups, I was like, have we ever had an 11, 12, 13 that has like a combined 200 innings from the previous year?
Yeah.
Like the risk here, like I totally get it with all three. But my goodness, the absolute premium that you have to pay to get these three, they're both going ahead of, just to name two names, you know, that are kind of like an NL-AL lefty-righty version of each other on the other end of the inning spectrum. They're both going well ahead of Framber Valdez and Logan Webb. Mm-hmm. And right, like just juxtaposing those two against those three, it's crazy. It really, really is. So I want to talk about how the two new Dodgers and our boy Skubal with my Tigers are looking for this year. And if people really should be investing that highly in these potential aces when at that price point, they really have to be something special. So let's start with Glasnow. He is the earliest. He's the one that I was hinting at that is not young. He's 30. Not that 30 is ancient.
Wow.
But he feels like almost mid-20s still, right? Because he has so few innings. He reached a career high 120 last year. 120, Nick. He now goes out to the Dodgers, which I know raises his profile, but I'm not sure it necessarily should that much, if only because it's not like the Rays aren't amazing with pitchers too.
Right.
So we know the Dodgers are, but he's going from one great organization to the other. At age 30, they had to pay him in addition to that trade. Where are just your general expectations with Glass now as he enters his age 30 season with only two pro seasons, MLB seasons, over 100 innings?
I think I saw this on Reddit where someone said, I think Tyler Glasnow's career, he has about like 530 innings. And then since 2016, when he came up, Bartolo Colon is like only 60 innings below him.
I believe it. And again, like that really
80 or something like that.
That completely underscores things.
Oh my gosh. You know, that's absolutely bonkers. I think I said it earlier in PitchCon. I think that you agreed with it. Was that for this year, especially at the value of a Ryan Pepiot, I'd rather have than Tyler Glasnow, right?
All day. I love like, Pepiot.
And something that I find so interesting that I've really jumped into this year is just understanding pitch shape and approach with certain fastballs. And it really shocked me to find that the Dodgers are not as in on high four seamers as I thought they would be. Like Pepiot and Bobby Miller and Walker Buehler, they all have these four seamers that would really play upstairs, and they just don't. They love the low four seamer more, which is super interesting for Pepiot going over. I mean, Glasnow's going to do Glasnow things. Like, he's not going to say, oh, no, maybe the Dodgers are right about low fastballs like the Pirates were. No. So he's going to continue to do that. That's fine. But it just kind of makes me think of like just the Dodgers as a whole. Like, okay, what is their real? They're trying to go down a way. This expected slugging is a little bit lower, but it's kind of strange. Anyway, with Glasnow, it's so risky. I can't do this. I just can't. There's no way. The guy is going to get hurt in some way.
It's top 40.
Like, I get it. Like 30%+ swing strike rate. You have the best situation now in Dodgers. You know, it's more so even than the Rays, I would say, because of likely more innings per start.
And win probability is higher, even though the Rays are good themselves.
Better defense too. Yep. But the thing is, it should be a six man. It legitimately should be a six man.
They've already hinted at it. Jeff Zimmerman had it in a Mining the News, which caused me to put a little bit of caution on some of these guys. It makes sense, especially as they've become, this is a little bit of a dated reference because this team's no longer good in basketball, but the Spurs kind of started the workload management stuff in the NBA of kind of getting to the playoffs, right? The playoffs were basically guaranteed. So let's get there as healthy as we can. We've seen it take over the NBA. I think the Dodgers are a team and the Rays themselves that can kind of do that over the course of the regular season because they're gearing up for October. But when you look at somebody like Glasnow and you see his 6'8 frame and the consistent injuries that he has, to you, are those two related at all?
It's possible. It absolutely could be. I mean, it literally like Judge and Stanton, these are massive dudes too, and it's just always there. There's also something that I found really interesting that Eno said yesterday during the craft, which was that guys with large extension are more inconsistent, right? And it's like these guys that can't get these secondaries working right. And I mean, it makes sense for like long arm circle essentially also leads to extension and stuff, because since you have the longer arms, you're gonna have, you know, the end of it too. And I do wonder if there's something to be said about more moving parts like that, then all of a sudden turns into more ridiculous whipping action and all of that. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's like Tyler Glasnow, look, we want to think that he's going to be able to do a 200 strikeout inning or a season or something like that, right? And I can't get out of my head that he's still a volatile guy. Like, he does not surgically take down batters. He's a thrower. His four-seamer does not have unreal elite swing strike rate stuff, right? It's like 12 to 13% swing strike rates on his four-seamer, not like 16% or 17%. And the curveball, which we love to quote, WOBA, like, look, it doesn't allow all this damage. Yeah, because he throws in the dirt and often into his strikes, and like, you know, he gets the low WOBA because those are strikeouts.
Exactly.
So it's a little different there. And the slider is so good. Don't get me wrong, that's like the pitch that changed Glasnow and fixed him.
Yes.
But I can't do that 11. You can't either. Like, where are you going to actually jump in on this?
I don't think I am with
Spurs. Yeah, right. It doesn't even matter ranking him because, like, we're not going to.
Glasnow, excuse me. But yeah, like, then it becomes that battle that I've, you know, been tackling ever since I started doing fantasy rankings that were public, how much do you rank him relative to where he's going versus literally where you're going to take him?
Right.
Like, he was 12th on my list. Am I going to take him 12th? I don't think so. So then is that a disingenuous ranking? I know Justin Mason and I have had that debate before. Like, should you rank guys where you would take them, where they are kind of going-ish, where they're going to be? How do you do that? I get the excitement. I really, really do. I would take another one of his teammates ahead of him. I've had a glass now in Miller. This is a segue Bobby into Miller, Yamamoto. 100%. I'm fully in on him as the next great ace. With Glasnow, before we move on to his other new teammate here, are you concerned at all by the 1 mile an hour drop in velo last year? I know that that's usually the marker once it gets over a mile an hour or more that we say, hey, there's a little something here. My guess is no, because it was his highest innings. It was still an amazing season, but I just want to ask, it dropped from 97 pretty consistently down to 97.6 and then 90 to 96.5 last year. Any concerns there on the velo?
No. I mean, I really did not notice. We've seen fluctuations from guys also at that level, like Luis Castillo or Zach Wheeler. Doesn't really matter, I think, when it comes to like 97 versus 96.
Bigger margin for error.
And you're right. I mean, like with Jesus Luzardo is a little different of going from like 95.5 closer to 96.5 than 97. Same with Carlos Rodon. But Eno's really talked about this a ton, about really 94 and then 95 is the big jump. And once you get 95 and above, then it's like, okay, this really doesn't have as large of an impact. Not to mention, again, that fastball for Glasnow wasn't really always the thing. It seems like it would be, but it's really that's just a setup for the other stuff. So that difference to me isn't like, oh no, now he doesn't have this weapon anymore.
I mean, I agree with that. It's just
an impact. Yeah.
I haven't heard anybody talking about it. I think it's understandable why, because once you are over that 95 threshold, as Eno's pointed out, you do have more wiggle room. I said that was the last thing. I do have one more thing.
Yeah.
As I understand it, projections are generally the median idea of where they can be. How does every projection have him, except for Zips? Dan Zaborski has him at 118 in the third. How does Steamer have him at 154 innings? Where are they getting that from? I'm not here to blast. Steamer. I'm just curious where that comes from.
Career high, yeah. I don't know. I would imagine that what you see is essentially you have, let's say it's 3 years or so. You have an injury gap in between. That's kind of make it messing up. And then you normally think, cool, after this 120, then there's growth. Think of it like a rookie or something like that. So I imagine that's where that's coming from.
I think you can build on it.
Right. And you know, it's not really out of the question. There was a quote of Talia Glasnow saying like, oh yeah, they fixed the things that have really been bothering me for years. And so now I feel like I'm much more myself than I used to be. Okay. Good old best shape of his life kind of stuff.
Yeah.
By the way, we do have some breaking news of Hector Neris. Everyone at PitchCon is going to the Cubs for 1 year, ooh, $9 million.
That's nice pickup.
But anyway, I will take that out of the podcast.
It's not game changing, but it is nice.
It's not game changing, but there you go. The Yankees were apparently in on that a little bit. So there you go. Good old Cubs doing another thing. Add them to the grade of that green, the offseason moves with Petriello and Towers and Wilkins. Anyway, when it comes to just the projections of Glasnow, it's like, I can't buy into it. And it's just, all right, it's the hardest thing that we do, right? Predicting volume and plate appearances. And as long as you understand the per play appearance expectation, or the per at bat, whatever you want to do, or per inning, we all probably think like it's wish casting for 140 every 5 days or every 6 days for the Dodgers this year.
And that's the allure of Glasnow, though. He is arguably the best per inning pitcher since he became a Ray. It's just that it's come in 61, 57, 88, 7, and 120 innings.
Right. And then think about it this way, though. This is Eric Samulski was talking about this and kind of convinced me, is inside of a 12-teamer, there's a lot more value because the gap, like a 15-teamer and all of these, and it actually really surprises me that so many people are in on Glasnow. We're using NFBC ADP for this. And that's 15-teamers. A lot of those are like draft champions, too.
That's exactly what I'm using as the draft champions.
And really, that kind of format is hey, we want to get guaranteed value more.
Mm-hmm.
And the gap between the replacement is much lower. But when it's higher in a 12-teamer, there's more appeal for Glasnow because it is Glasnow plus a replacement. Now, the replacement obviously isn't an ace, but
it could be a lot, more likely.
Right. And it's more beneficial, which then means that, great, I'll take the higher quality. That makes it more valuable to get Glasnow. So to hear 11 in those deeper formats, and it's like, is that, should I have him like top 15 in the 12 team? I just can't do it. It's too risky. You don't need to take a risk.
Like, I get it. Yeah. Cause Justin Mason harps on this too and says, I'd rather take a guy like this in a 10-12 with waivers, because in the draft champions too, if he does bust again, if Glasnow does go belly up injury wise, that's a dead spot. Right. Like, you can't get rid of him in a 50 round draft and hold. And yes, you got 49 other guys, but as we talk about all the time when Justin and I are talking about draft champions, it sneaks up on you quickly. You get two guys demoted to the minors, you get three injuries, you drafted a prospect who you didn't expect until June, and then boom, you can't fill a position. So I agree that, like, I'm more willing to take the risk on Glasnow in a shallower format, but pitcher 11, pick 39 is still so much. No, so let's move on to his new teammate who's coming over from Japan, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Now, the question with him is just the unknown of coming over to the States. In some ways, it's a much more difficult question because it is so wide open. You don't know personality of how people are going to react to something like that. Comes over, he's a giant superstar in Japan. He's going to be a giant superstar here. It seems like stats are unimpeachable overseas, looks like absolutely the real deal. Coming over at 25, Shohei kind of started a little something there coming over young. Now we get Yamamoto at a young age. What are we expecting here? Obviously, he goes to an excellent team. Can Yamamoto be somebody who hits the ground running right away that you would be interested in at pick 44? Pitcher 12.
Yeah, of these three, I'm most intrigued, I think, in Yamamoto. It does feel the safest of the three.
Yes, and because it doesn't have injury hangups the way the other two do.
Injury hangups, and there are some critical things of Tarek Skubal that I'm like, I don't know if I actually am as high as it used to be. That's a fun conversation. I know, I'm so sorry.
That one's coming up next.
Yeah, but I wonder actually if you agree with me on it. But with Yamamoto, it's such a good, again, team context. It's important to really temper the expectations of volume, because not only is he coming over from Japan where he's used to, of course, a longer rest. Is this whole six-man rotation thing that we're thinking is going to happen, but also keep in mind the Dodgers have him for 10 years. Yeah. And that means that they are not going to push, like, treat this like a prospect almost at 24. Right. They're not going to just say, oh, cool, now here you got your free agent signing, like a normal one, like a Nola or something. Great. Now we need you to be our workhorse of 6-7 innings every time. Like, they are going to be careful with Yamamoto.
So, and they can afford to be, right?
Exactly.
Because again, it's $162. They're going to get the playoffs almost assuredly. Yes. So they don't have to push him. They want these two standing upright in October. That is the most important thing.
Yeah. So exactly right. You're not going to get more than 150 innings. You can't really expect that.
That's how I feel.
For those in deeper leagues, it's fun, but you're probably not going to get as much volume as you'd want. And you say, well, okay, what's the difference between like 180, 150 innings and 200? That's 33% impact of ratios. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge deal.
Pardon me to interrupt you.
Yeah, go ahead.
But somebody like Nola, who you talk about, is going after him. And that guy's a workhorse. And I know he has ups and downs with the ERA, but like bankable innings when talking about Aaron Nola. And I mentioned Fromber and Webb. Like, those are three guys back there that are going after all three of these dudes that are innings. But now maybe the play is take one of these three with one of those three, and you can balance it a little bit. But these price tags are insane.
Then you can just get a really good hitter and then just get the
leather. Exactly. Get the great hitter in the top 50 and then get your Nola, Fromber, Logan Webb for 180 plus innings.
Obviously, the pushback on Nola is that, well, the ERA impact at like 200 innings, and if it's a 4-5 ERA again, then like, wait, that's really bad for me. Totally get that one. I have some theories about Nola of like, hey, he has really good extension and much better VAA than you would think. I mean, actually, you probably should think it because it is a low arm angle. So he should be throwing high four seamers. And why isn't he doing this? And it drives me up the wall that he doesn't, because he could actually soar with that pitch upstairs, and that's fewer home runs. And then the curveball gets better and so on and so forth. And also, it's an even year for him, for Nola. So he's fine.
It's time for him to bounce back.
No problem. But really keep in mind, too, let's say you say Yamamoto gets a strikeout in inning, which is, I think, slightly conservative based on what we've heard. Maybe close to like 27% strike everything, like the 24-25 that is a caper inning. But let's just say it's a caper inning and we're saying 150 innings. That's 150 strikeouts. And Nola, we're like 200. Again, 33% gap of strikeouts. That's huge. Yep. That's a lot. So I am more in on Nola for this reason. He will help. But yeah, even Webb too, same idea.
194 Ks, because he gets so much volume, and we talk about his K rate, which matters. But when you're piling up 216 innings, the K total is what really matters at the end of the day. And he gets there with a .194. I love Logan Webb. So, you know, I keep harping on these three because I love all three of these workhorse guys, and these other three really scare me. But I do agree with you that Yamamoto is my safest of the bunch, which feels weird for a guy who's never touched a major league diamond, or at least for a major league game. I'm sure he's been over here for exhibitions or whatnot.
Or WBC, he was here?
Was the WBC in the States for him?
I think so.
I'm going to say because it finished in the States. Duh. I'm an idiot. Yeah. So, his stats, like I said, unimpeachable, disgusting over in the MPB. He won their version of the Cy, I think, 2 years running. He's been untouchable. You talk about the 150 innings. Does he bring any concerns with him from a performance standpoint that you share? Or do you think he can be a low threes, maybe even sub three ERA, great whip, good Ks, good win potential? Are the skills there for Yamamoto that you think, even if it is 140, 150 innings, that they will be pristine or close to?
Yeah, I mean, there's no real concern, honestly. My understanding is four great pitches, great command, doesn't walk guys. Like, four-seamer is great, his splitter's great, cutter's great, curveball's great. Like, it's all just like, yep, he should be good. And also throw in the Dodgers of just their defense is going to help. It's just how it is. Win potential will be there. Like, it's all what you would want as far as skills go. I don't know if it's going to be like a 30 to 35% ceiling of striker rate. Probably not, but yeah, 25 to 30% range of strikeouts. Like, that's phenomenal. So, yeah, no, the skills to me are, I would be really disappointed if we saw like high threes, close to 4 ERA. If we saw like a 120 whip or something like that, I'd be pretty shocked.
The only thing that maybe would be there is if, you know, we talked about the ball difference between Japan and the majors, if that gave him some fits to maybe influence some homers off of Yamamoto, because otherwise I just don't see how it doesn't work. And that's how I ended my little write up with him, was like, he almost seems just too good to fail. So his price point, I get a little bit more than Glasnow's, if I'm being honest.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's jump over to my Tiger.
Yeah.
Because I love Tarik Skubal, obviously. I have pretty much from Jump Street. He is a Tiger. That is my favorite team. I was pretty stunned to see where the buzz was. And it came home to me very quickly at the Arizona Fall League first pitch conference that we were at. Talk of the town, price through the roof already. And I'm like, wow, I thought I was going to be the big guy here, putting him as a top 20 type starter. Turns out I was behind the curve, big time, big time behind the curve, Nick. I'm like, oh, 20. Look at me. I'm going to get my Skubal shares. Yeah, right. How about you get zero of him if you have him at top 20? He is 13th. Now, one of the best second half finishes of the year. I will say this, between he and Glasnow, at least he has a full season under his belt of taking 29 turns in a rotation. It was still only 149 innings, but he took the turns every fifth day. And that's a big deal to me. 118 innings in 2022, only 80 last year because of the injury. Skubal now being treated like a premium ace. Sounds like you can't really get there. What's your initial assessment of Skubal when you hear that he's a top 15 starter off the
draft? It's really funny. I had Tarik Skubal at like 15 or something, or 16 in first pitch Arizona, like when that original October ranking, I was like, yeah, Tarik Skubal, do you realize that his fastball four-seamer had like a 72% strike rate? It was like 100th percentile and one of the best swing strike rates in the majors, like across the board, all these percentiles, 99, 99, 98, 100 on this four-seamer. I was like, well, it's clearly one of the best four-seamers in the game. And then, I mean, really my big thing this offseason, there's really two that I've changed a lot of just like simplifying the approaches of me doing assessments as much as I can. And the two I've really leaned into is, okay, four seamer shape. I need to understand this better because it's just such good information. Such a, like, I think the most telling one was understanding Wasker and Noah, because this was like a year or two ago. Like he throws so hard, but I just would always see the results being so bad for Wasker, you know, his fastball. And why is that? Oh, terrible extension, terrible IVB, terrible VAA. Like, this makes all the sense now, right? I get it. Why even the velocity is there, you know, it's the shape is just so bad. Eric Loggenhagen talked about the same thing about like how it's possible that velocity guns like in stadiums maybe ruined scouting a little bit because that's all they cared about for a moment.
Yep.
And then instead of looking at the actual shape of these pitches. So I didn't really have my enlightenment truly until Kyle Bland had his PLV app and really got into it when it came to individual pitches that we have now. And it's not good for Tarek Skubal.
What isn't good specifically? The fastball shape?
Extension, the IVB and the VAA are all like average, if not below average, on his four seamer. And that shocked me because that thing performs so dang well. So
what do you do when there's a disconnect there? Because right, his stats...
I'm conflicted, and there's two stories you can say. You can say, okay, why is that fastball performing as well as it is? Or maybe it's okay. It's like beating that kind of stuff because he's throwing 96 as opposed to 94 on that four seamer. And it's from the left side, which then plays up a little bit higher from the left side than it does on the right. It's just not seen as much. It's just a little more confusing, all that kind of stuff. There could be that. It could also be that it was an 80 inning sample, that he had adrenaline coming back from Tommy John, that he played a pretty weak schedule as well. And that is a little more Occam's razor to me, of like, that's just a simpler explanation for it than just saying that this is like the exception that really beats out all the pitch shape stuff. Now, there's another explanation you can throw in, which is, well, the rest of his repertoire is so good that it really promotes this four seamer. And also his locations are just that good. Locations are actually not that great. Like, he was really good at first, and then he got much worse getting more in the zone and being more hittable with the four seamer, which is kind of terrifying. What is the repertoire for Skubal? Well, I think one of the other explanations could be his changeup is amazing. It's like it turned into this elite pitch that is so good against righties, and then all of a sudden that makes a four seamer look that much better because of the velocity gaps, and it's just they don't know which one is which means he can get away with it in the zone more. That's pretty cool. But then that's it. I don't like his slider at all. It's like a cutter. It's like a 10% swing strike rate pitch. Like, this is not the main thing. The curveball is very inconsistent.
No, it was the changeup fastball that drove him in that order for Skubal in that second half.
Yeah. And the other thing that I'm looking at a lot more these days, which I don't really have on the top of my head for Skubal, is lefty-righty splits. And I'm really, as much as I can, especially in the offseason, because it's really hard to just take that time in the during the season to really understand what they throw against lefties, what they throw against righties. Offseason, I can take my time and really grasp it more.
He had a 200-point OPS split, by the way, favoring his work against lefties. Only 42.
Yeah,
only faced sample. 42 lefties.
And the thing is, he doesn't have the slider. Right? He has a cutter really against them, which isn't very good against lefties. So it is interesting to me that he doesn't have the big nullifier that you normally see as a lefty on lefty, which is a solid slider down in a way or better curveball. And against the righties, yes, the changeup is so good. I think the fastball gets worse. I think the velocity comes down a little bit. And I don't think there's going to be that development with that slider, which makes me still in on Skubal. Like, I think he's still going to be productive, but 13th?
Yeah, the 13th
like,
pitcher.
Like, I can't do that. I have him around, like, 20, 24, something like that right now.
It's really difficult to pay these premiums. I'm pretty excited about Skubal. I wonder, does reputation of lefty-lefty save him a little bit there? If you're worried about his arsenal against lefties, just the fact that a lot of teams are still going to sit a couple key lefties against a premier guy like this, will that maybe protect him a little bit? I know it's hard to bake that into like a projection, but what do you think? Because he only faced 42. That number surprises me. 268 plate appearances against righties for Skubal.
I mean, that's pretty hilarious, right?
That's crazy. Even for a small sample, that's crazy.
You got to think that Scooble's doing something. Like, you can't just settle with this cutter. And it's labeled as a slider. It's a cutter.
And what's your cut? Not pun intended, I guess. What's your cutoff there between between the two? It's velo usually and movement.
Thank you. I'm here for it. No, I mean, it's the movement profile just is not aggressive enough.
Yeah.
And that's really why I'm calling it that. It just, I mean, you can even see from the result. And this is the thing that, like, over the years, I don't know if you've done the same thing, where I wouldn't really look at shape that much because I always just felt that the results would, for the most part, tell you if it's good or bad. Like, with the Watsker, no, I'm like, oh, I understand it now. Sure. But, like, I could have just said the fastball is bad, and it is.
Yes.
And it's kind of been difficult for me. I'm being like, well, okay, this fastball is just so good. And, but the results aren't. And, like, and but with that cutter, sorry, slider cutter, same thing. It's like, it's such a low swing strike rate. You never see sliders at like a 10% swing strike rate, especially against lefties as a lefty. It, like, something's wrong.
And I think, again, anecdotally of watching Scooble start to start, he'll rip off a few that are legit sliders, but then it will tighten up there where you're like, that was a bad one. That was a bad one. That was a bad one. There's a good one. That was a bad one. That was a bad one. Like, like, you'll get the one that sweeps really nicely, and then you'll get those little wink, 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 and they're not that impressive. Get back to the changeup type deal as you're watching the game.
What was that noise, by the way?
Wink, wink, wink. That's when it cuts. Yeah. That, every David Robertson pitch goes wink, 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 because it's just a little cutter. That's W-E-E-N-T, wink. wink.
So wait, are you, do you still have Scooble, you think, at 20?
I actually moved him up, but again, that was in the, like, am I moving him up to match ADP because I'm in on him versus where I really feel. My next update that's going to go out is going to actually start shuffling some rankings, and he got moved down to 19, and Yamamoto actually jumped up, took Glasnow's spot. Glasnow and Scooble both came down. What's that?
I haven't done mine yet, so I don't know yet. I mean, like, I could be saying all this stuff, but it's like, rankings are weird because innately I'm like, well, this is a guy who should be here. But then I look at everyone else, I'm like, well, all of them should be here. So,
I still like tiers. Like, that's why I like tiers of talent, because, you know, you can take different guys there. But he's, even in this tier, though, it's a mix of guys that have done it versus pretty scary guys from my tier, at least. Like, Grayson Rodriguez was in there. Bobby Miller's in there. Like, there's some fear about those two.
There's a big difference between those guys for me now. I used to be really in on Grayson.
Well, let me get a little Grayson action in here then. It's a little detour. We didn't plan on this.
Oh, yeah. No, we always detour sport.
We have a fire framework. It's a skeleton. Yeah.
That's what we always say. But cool. Backup plan here.
Now, the birth of the fireside was a brilliant half season by Luis Castillo.
Right.
Have you learned from that? You're trying not to make the same mistake of going off of a brilliant half season by Grayson Rodriguez, and thus you're cool on him.
That's interesting. The funniest part about that fireside is that was 2017. I was obsessed, completely. So we were both obsessed. Mm-hmm. One of my first articles, I think, for you was 5 at bats of Luis Castillo and be like, why I love him.
We were proven right, by the way. Like, it was obviously rough the very next year, but
it was like one of the more embarrassing podcasts for me because my attitude was like, I don't know how I could do anything different. You know, like, I don't know because he is so good.
How can we not rank these 89 innings in the top 20? What are y'all talking about? Yeah, and for those that don't know, he had a 4.30 ERA and a 1.22 WHIP. Home runs were a big issue in 2018, but he had a good second half that year as well. We stayed bought in, and now he's an ace. So anyway, continue.
It was so funny. Like, after that fireside, he was great.
Mm-hmm. We spurred him.
We were right. Okay. But no, I mean, that obviously is in my head, but it's also the, you know, Kyle Bland's favorite shirt is process over results.
Yes.
And it's one of those elements of, okay, cool. What is it that made us interested? What is that thing that we should still focus on? And as you know, we've changed over 7 years since then, or 2018 was 6. Jesus. Oh my gosh. Look at us. How did we get here?
I know.
but it's different now. We have more information. We have different ways of assessing this stuff, which is, I think, better than ever. And I would hope if it's like,
we're not going backwards.
So like the assessments of Luis Castillo, look, I was too in on, I think, on the sinker at that time. Luis Castillo is a different pitcher now with a four seamer, which is much better.
Yep.
And, you know, being a four seamer or really a fastball changeup guy, I'm not as in on as a righty as I used to be. And I think that preached a lot of the volatility. The locations of his sinkers weren't very good at the time. It preached some of that up and down for him. But with Grayson, it's a little different because what's so interesting, I think back then I would have been so in on Grayson because I didn't have the information of his ICR and his pitch shape as much as I do now. And the ICR being ideal contact rate, it is to me the best assessment of batted ball quality. So if you look at hard hit rate and barrel rate and average allowed, all that stuff, no, I don't care. I just care about ICR, which is ideal contact rate, which essentially you have two types of batted balls in my view. The ones that are a 60% or higher chance of a hit and ones that are well under 20%.
And this is data pulled from Savant.
Yes. And those that are above 60% are like flares and burners, and which is like super hard into the ground, or those ones that are those doinks that are really annoying. And then you have your solid contact, and then you have your barrels, right? And ICR to me is like the best predictor of like hits allowed, essentially, in this way. And his ICR and his four seamer, you generally want like 40% or lower. Like the elite ones are always underneath 40%. His was 48%. ICR, which is like absurdly bad. And that
This for Grayson. Yeah, because it was 54 for the year. And you're saying that his ICR was 48 during the good stretch?
Yes.
Wow. I did not.
Yes. But the thing is, the slider and the change were both excellent at this. Mm-hmm. But I'm watching this being like, how could that be? It's like 98. Like, this should be, you know, I would have watched this before. I'm like, no, this fastball is going to be great. You know, don't worry.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe it still will. You know, but that has me spooked. That has me as a situation of like, wait, maybe this four seamer shape, in which isn't like exceptional, I would say it's fine, but it's not as good as I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I can like really lean in on Grayson because a four seamer is getting crushed as much as it is. And it's not like Spencer Strider's, which has a higher than you'd want ICR, like 44%. But you got to keep in mind, that's only when it's in play. And
which that's the thing.
Such high
for it's never implied
on his right.
Yeah.
So, but Grayson isn't getting that like 15% swing strike rate on his four seamer yet.
No, he's like,
right?
12,
he's not,
12
he's not at that. Right. So wait, hold on a second. And the new Bitcoin, I'm calling it truly Bitcoin now, Spore. Money pitch was before, right? That was O swing, Z rate, zone rate and swing strike rate. That was really me trying to do these three, which is actually swing strike rate, and ICR rate. And that is now Bitcoin because it's the modern money pitch. I know we called it really good before, but now that's a Bitcoin pitch, okay? And those three are like, if you are able to be 65% or higher on your strike rate, if you're able to be sub 40% or really sub 35%, that'd be amazing. And then above 15% or really 20% swing strike rate. Those are like, oh my gosh, pitches. And Grayson's kind of struggling outside the strike rate on that four seamer. So I don't love that being like the main thing for him. And that's why I'm kind of tepid on Grayson, because I had him like at 11 or 12 thinking that four seamer is so good. And then the secondaries are going to be even better. And now I'm like, well, maybe the four seamer isn't actually that good.
Yeah, you got me a little, you know, cautious here now, reconsidering my 15th ranking, because I was a big fan. I love that. Love the return from the minors after he got blitzed in May. I think what's lost a little bit in Grayson's season was that he actually started fine. April was not bad. You know, his second start was a little crummy. I think Oakland hilariously ripped him. But if you look at it,
like, how can you?
Yeah, like, how are you giving up anything to Oakland? But like, if you look at that, you know, he faced my Tigers twice, so that certainly helped. And he closed with 10 shutout innings against them. But the first month was not bad. 4.07 ERA, 2.89 FIP. Okay, we're rolling. But then the home run barrage in May was what set everything in motion. Three against KC, in KC, by the way. Two against Tampa, two against the Angels, one at Toronto, three against Texas at home. Boom, go to the minors for 2 months almost. Comes back, one of the best pitchers in baseball from that stretch. I got to be honest, though, I did not dig into the specific pitch metrics of particularly his fastball for Grayson Rodriguez to see that it had not improved the way everything else did. I knew the secondaries had because the strikeout rate was there and just kind of eye test. You're watching those games and like, wow, this guy's on. But with that fastball volatility, does that maybe, I mean, I don't want to go too much over an inning and two thirds, but did you see any of that in the ALDS game when he got smoked by Texas?
Yeah, right.
Maybe so they were clocking that fastball.
So I do want to clarify here. So we have this PLV app, which is amazing from the Kyle Bland made. Mm-hmm. And what's so cool about it is I requested like, hey, can you do a date range? You know? And he's like, yeah, sure. And he added it like that night because he's the best. So I actually right now have pulled up from like July 1st, moving on just that four seamer. And I will share this inside of the PitchCon stuff for you guys to see. And, you know, I'm maybe being actually a little too aggressive against it. It's not as bad as I thought, which is why I'm really happy that I'm sharing this now for everybody. So this is Grayson Rodriguez's a four seamer. And the extension is the cool thing, right? The 7.2 is really good. I think the thing that scared me the most is that this is below average IVB at 14.5. Yeah, you want to see like 16 and above, right? And the thing is like Zach Wheeler, his four seamer is one of the best out there without amazing IVB. It's like 15, but his VAA is better than the 1.2. It's like close to like 1.4 or so. He has that same elite extension, same velocity and command as well. And that's the other aspect of this. This is Grayson Rodriguez's heat maps on his four seamer. He stays away middle to lefties. And let me tell you, if there's anything that I hate, it is middle away four seamers to either side of the plate. Like, just don't do that. That's where pitches get crushed a ton. So
especially if you miss,
right?
Like your margin for error.
You poke it out with a bat. It's a flat one. It's easy, right? And with his VAA, which is actually above average, I'll take a 1.2 all day. That's fine. If it's 1.4, then we go, oh boy, you know? Let's say the Vince McMahon thing, which actually, you know, I'm not going to do that reference anymore.
Not him anymore. Yeah. Right. Funny when you said that yesterday, I was like, I wonder if he knows.
I didn't know.
Yeah. We don't reference him anymore.
I was like, oh gosh, you know, but right. So sorry about that, but middle away fastball is not what you want to do against lefties. And he did that a ton, which would explain it with the ICR. And you can actually see in the seat map too, that, Grace Rodriguez is too much in the zone with his four seamer. He's not really going upstairs with it. He is inside the zone, but not out of it nearly as much as we would want. Yeah. So then I'll even say, okay, cool. There's bad IVB on Grayson Rodriguez's four seamer. Don't like that, but it is elite velocity, 97, 98. It is elite extension, which obviously helps with the secondaries too. And the VA isn't so bad. So maybe I'm being too harsh on this and maybe it's more me seeing the results of the 48% ICR and the low IVB that's saying, okay, in these locations, like, are we going to see the location be good enough to overcome the IVB that the ICR then comes down, right? I don't know.
And that's the thing. Like, there could be growth. I think the point here with all, and, you know, Grayson, again, wasn't even on our game plan to talk about, but with all four of these pitchers is you have to pay the full freight. So, like, Yeah, the projection might come, the development might come for Glasnow's innings and for Scooble's slutter, if you will, combining slider and cutter, and for Grayson's fastball, but you have no wiggle room. Like, even Grayson is down here at pick 64. That is still a pretty high price to pay for somebody who has a half season of quality.
Right. And it's hard. I think I just even convinced my own self, been like, okay, get a little bit more in on Grayson. Like, they've got to fix that a little bit. And at least he's got two secondaries that are legit. I
quite like him, but you did open my eyes to the fastball struggles here in the second half that I had glossed over. I don't think I'm going to move him down, but I've got him at 15. Again, that's a huge premium to pay for somebody with so little innings.
I think I'll have him over at least Glasnow. Oh, maybe not. I don't know. Oh, guys, it's so hard. At least over Tarek Skubal. I'm going to say that. Okay. I have Grayson above that. Yamamoto. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's safer, but it's fewer innings. And the ceiling is going to be a little bit more limited than Grayson because Grayson could just go every 5 days into like 170, 180 innings.
I totally think he could go a buck 80. Right? Yep. Without even like a ton of pressure, right? Like he threw 163 last year. It's just not inconceivable that he goes the full freight. I have him over Yamamoto right now. I got them all right next to each other, though. It's Glasnow 12, Skubal 14, Grayson 15, Yamamoto 16 in my current rankings.
Right. But yeah, sorry. This is the thing, guys. I'm honest with y'all. I'm like, absolutely not Grayson. No way. Wait, actually, hold on.
No. And if you're not like, I don't know. And it's we can get into a whole bunch of stuff about like rankings and wanting to stand your ground on things versus taking in new information and being open. I don't need to stand ground. Like, I'll make changes when I see things that are worth making changes. Like exactly. Yeah. So, I'm certainly open to that. Like I said, I'm going to cool a little bit on Scooble. By the way, I brought up the projections on the big innings totals with Scooble. Projections are part of why Scooble's price is on fire too. Mm-hmm. He is projected by the auction calculator earn $27. That puts him on a par with Pablo Lopez. So you're not even going to get the dose of cold water that projections would normally offer. That's on a par with Zach Wheeler, by the way, who I have ranked fourth. So usually, you know, like Bobby Miller, I love him. I'm obsessed. But people could say, oh, let me go to the projections. They're going to give me a little dose of cold water. He's only projected for $8, which I think is crazy, but that's neither here nor there. But with Scooble, you're getting total confirmation bias of like, oh, the projections are with me too. And projections are usually more cautious. So how do you navigate something like that if you're drafting where you're in on somebody, but you know it's scary and the projections back it up? Because that's usually supposed to be the pull down.
Projections, I can't. Projections are cool because for me, it's for me, when it comes to projections, they're really good at suggesting. They're good at like, hey, understand why this is happening in this way.
Yeah.
And then I fine tune from there. $27 value for Tarek Skubal is just, I can't do that. And they again need to come at one number. Right. They're not saying that this is the number. They're saying that this is just kind of the amalgamation of everything.
Exactly.
And it's really hard to stick to that in some way. If you feel like, okay, you know what? The risk of this, the intra SD, as Ariel Cohen would say with ATC, is just not fit for me. Then great. Then you can adjust it accordingly, which is, if you go and watch the auction panel that Ariel Cohen did, the art and science of it. I highly recommend that one. I saw that in Florida last year and I demanded that he does it for BitchCon. Taught me so much. And at the end of the day, when it comes to projections, if you disagree with it, just change the dollar value to whatever you think is appropriate and then go into your draft with that dollar, right?
Yeah.
So for Tarek Skubal, it's not going to be 27 for me, but there's going to be something, obviously. I'm not going to say like, no, I wouldn't take it for $1. Like, okay, no. So then let's figure out where that is. But it's just not going to be a 27 for me.
So perhaps part of this is the relative uncertainty that kind of plagues the upper tiers in general right now. I think part of it is a changing of the guard, right? Like we still have stalwarts like Cole and Wheeler up top. I guess, even a guy like Castillo is now a pretty full-fledged veteran. Gausman, we talked Webb, Valdez. But even Strider's only, a year plus into his excellence, and he's the number one guy off the board, even ahead of Cole, believe it or not. And then you start to get into that second tier, and it is Pablo Lopez who, talent is there, but shoulder was always a concern. We're not 100% out of the woods with that. That can crop up at any moment. Sure. I'm not projecting it. I hope it does not happen, but it's always lingering. Yeah. Glasnow, Miller, Scooble, Grayson, Yamamoto, Fried's health, Nola's ERA, Gilbert is kind of steady, boring. Zach Eflin's done it for 1 year. That whole tier has giant questions.
Yeah, good old warts, baby. Let's go.
And so is that part of why people are saying, well, give me just the sky high potential then. If everyone has a question, I love Max Fried, but I don't need his 8Ks per nine. Let me shoot the moon for 12Ks per nine. I know we use K percentage, but I'm just using K9 right now for the sake of ease.
Easy.
But like, let me shoot for Glasnow's 13 and just pray that I get the 150 inning season. Do you think there's any of that influence because of the lack of stability throughout most of the upper pitching ranks?
I can understand that a ton. I put out a tweet that was 15 of the top 31 pitchers in ADP last year had fewer than 25 starts.
Wow.
Right? Isn't that shocking?
And you know what else is kind of funny too? All the while that this is happening, the reigning NL Cy Young is A, unsigned, but B, the only one that everyone's taken like a real, close focus on and like really trying to be cautious with him. It's funny how Snell is kind of like, no one wants to throw caution to the wind. He can't do that again. He walked that tightrope. He's going to walk everybody again and his whip's going to go through the roof. And yet we're taking all these chances on the Dodgers guys and Scooble. And listen, everyone knows I love Snell. like we're Twitter friends. I don't want to overestimate our friendship. I'm in the bag for him, but I do think it's funny how he gets all this scrutiny and so many other guys that don't have two Cy Youngs on their ledger are skating essentially.
Yeah. I think that's what's interesting about it to me is there's like injury versus skills almost.
Yes.
And
where do you come out on that, that you would be more safe, be more willing to bet on at the high
I think end? I'd be more, I always want to bet on health than I do want to skills.
Same.
Just yep, because like if the question is like health, then it's like, great, then I get quality still. I know yep. I'm getting it. It's just how much of it.
And I could get lucky with the innings.
Right. And then when it comes to skill, with Snell, it's like he's obviously skilled. You can't have a 1-2 ERA without like skill. Like it's not luck all there, guys. Like sure, you got fortune in some ways, but you did that. And that 1-2 ERA was over, I think, what, 17 starts?
Yeah, a huge run. How much do you believe in the purposefulness behind a lot of his walks to say, well, I'm down 3-1?
Oh, yeah. First one, it's to say like, this is by design. And it was. Yeah, I think I actually use the exact phrase walking the tightrope with Snell because it's like, it's really hard to do that. Yeah. And he was in such a good rhythm, especially with his changeup, that allowed him to do it. But man, is it hard to replicate. I feel like Snell's been trying to do that for ages, and I'm glad it worked out as it did for him. I'm mm-hmm. really glad. It was so awesome to see it. It is tough to do for another full year, or at least just 17 starts again, right? So we weren't ecstatic about Snell for the first 7 weeks of last year.
No, there was some pretty harsh critiques for him out there. I'm like, right. Why did I draft this guy again type deal? And like, I put myself through that. You know, you'd see the limitations of fantasy owners saying, I knew I shouldn't have done this.
I would get all the comments about it being, you know, why do you have Snell up so high? Yeah.
Still, where are you ranking him? I'm going to cut him.
All of it. And I get it. We just don't know if it's going to click or not. And there's something to be said about that for me is I'm very much about decisions. I look back at a lot of teams and I often feel I should be quicker on the trigger to cut guys and thinking less about the future and more about now as much mm-hmm. as possible.
And that's league dependent too. You talk about 10s and 12s, you can go on the wire and you can take chances. And the one thing you have to understand in that, do not be afraid to get things wrong. Meaning you're going to cut somebody that someone else is going to pick up and get value from, the same way you're going to pick up somebody else's quote unquote trash that turns into a gem for you. That is the nature of 10s and 12s. If you are afraid to move on from guys, you're probably not going to win in those leagues unless you made the perfect draft. You've got to stick and move. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And one of the things that Justin and I learned is mixing 10s and 12 team leagues with 15s can be difficult because changing the mindset. I would never cut this guy in a 15. He needs to be cut in a 12. That decision point is difficult if you're mixing the leagues. So Justin Flatt quit 12s last year. He was 15s only because he wanted to focus on that way of playing.
Traitor.
And I think there is some sense to it, even smart. If it is if it is tens, right? Like, okay, I excel at tens. Play the tens. None of the 10, 12, 15, or whatever size is easier than the other, in my opinion. I think they all present their own challenges. And in those shallower leagues, knowing when to cut guys that were like your 12th round pick on May 1st, that's viable. In a 15 team, that's probably not viable unless they're really there's some really extenuating circumstance, but performance can be a reason in a 10 teamer to cut your 12th rounder 3 weeks into the season. Maybe not 2 weeks, but like
rounder, a month in or something.
You gotta move. I do wonder how many people cut Snell last year. He had a 5 ERA through his first 10 starts. Guarantee he was popping up on some 10 team waiver wires.
Oh yeah. And I think one of the things that we've navigated through the years on these is like I'm very much of the 12 team standpoint. You're much more in the 15. Mm-hmm. And it can be really hard for us to properly decide what matters in like that
exactly
area of like I call him a Toby, like that's value. I'm like, I don't know.
And I'm like, that guy's a dude. Because in 15 team, you add those three extra teams and it changes things so much. And so
pitchers, right?
Yeah.
And it's just, oh my gosh. So it's very, very difficult to discern a lot on draft day when it comes to like, okay, no, I purposefully go out of my way to say like, no, I don't want a hipster, headache-inducing pitcher stifling the entire roster. I don't want my own happiness to be stilted. Even if they come out successful in the end, just the anxiety of the first 2 months of the year.
Yep.
So I think that's pushing down Snell more for me because of that. Not to say that he can never do it again. It's very possible that he could. I can also say, like, it's a contract year a bit, and he's going to be a lot more focused on nailing that in 1 year. It's the Glenn Colton and the Wolf thing, right?
Yep.
And okay, not to say that Snell can't do that. I'm not saying anything about his character in this way. It's just a typical thing that we see.
Of course.
And it's just all those pieces, like, yeah, I'll just let someone else sweat that one out. Like, how I'll be like, no, Charlie Morton, I'm not going to do this. Mm-hmm. It's going to take me until August next year, because every year we add a month to when you finally get it together.
Exactly. Yes, then he finally, and then eventually the months are going to run out. He'll have to finally retire. That's a decision I made on saves, Nick, about, you know, manage to your strengths. I got tired of the saves rat race. So I just started paying for saves. And listen, if you paid for saves last year and it was Edwin Diaz, you caught a bad one. That doesn't mean don't pay for saves. If you look back at the recent history, even though the workhorse save guys are dwindling, their payout is stable. When paying for saves has delivered the last like 6-7 years, at least that's the only data that I've studied. So you talk about managing to not want those hipster pitchers. That's the way I feel about saves. You could feel the same way about not wanting to take the risk on Skubal. So give me Fromber. I don't want to take the risk on Yamamoto. So give me Logan Webb or Aaron Nola or Logan Gilbert. Manage to your strengths as a fantasy manager. 100%. You don't always have to go with the crowd. And I think that's a great point there that you say that you don't want a hipster like potentially Blake Snell. Because here's the thing. He also ran a 256 BABIP, which is his second best of his career. And I don't need to tell you when the best one was. It was his other Cy Young season when he had a 241. Other than that, he's a career 288. So, and 288 isn't even bad. Like, that's still better than average. And yet, moving back to a 288 would probably send his whip close to 1.3.
That is true. But part of the design, I would say, about him not nibbling, but nibbling around and walking guys is his ability to then make them swing on pitches that are
absolutely
hit. Number one mistake rate in the majors was Blake Snell.
Wow, that's incredible.
He made the fewest, and mistake rate is 2 times the chance of allowing a hit. So that's a new PLV stat where I'm rolling this year. But like, that was so eye-opening about, it's not just he's just allowing walks. Like, oh, I lost this guy, go ahead. No, it's every single time he's just not throwing that mistake pitch that other guys are. So that's the ability he had in 2018, had it last year too, but number one mistake rate. He wasn't that in 2022.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that pans out. Also, Framber Valdez, that sinker to righties just will always drive me insane. But yeah, he's still good. So fine.
I do love him. By the way, I swear I looked at the clock like 2 minutes ago and it was 9:30. And I was like, what was the third thing we were going to pick? Like some sort of pitchers. And now it's 10:01. Well, so we are done. We don't have to continue.
We are done. Spore, it's been great doing another fireside chat with you.
It's been absolutely wonderful, Nick. PitchCon, a rousing success yet again. Even with basically 2 full days left here, crush the goal already. We're at $10,765 with a $10,000 goal. So everything the rest of the way is gravy. Going for some great causes. Get that cure for ALS. Our great friend Sarah Lang's in the baseball industry battling that horrendous disease. And so all this money that you're raising, all this amazing content that you're putting out, you're doing a great job with it, man. I love you so much. You're the best.
This isn't me. This is a product of the community. People like you as well.
It is, but you're still the king. I will be back. I will be back tomorrow.
We'll be back tomorrow.
Some ADP hitters, right?
Yeah, exactly right. You have a new addition as well. We have Toby Gavin is going to be their BAFIT crazy with Joe Rico.
That panel is insane now. By the way, are you going to know any of the players that we're talking about?
No. This is why I have this panel, so I can learn things.
There you go. Okay. We will teach you some fun stuff with the ADP battles for hitters. But thank you so much, Nick, for joining me by the fireside to talk some intriguing young pitchers.